I-909, so it's going to be a late arriving cold front. It would be nice if it was one of those days where the rain came through and then the wind started turning around and you felt the temperature drop throughout the day. Unfortunately, that's not the way it's going to play out. Highs of 80 today, but then it does cool off for tomorrow, as you just heard. Highs of 69 tomorrow, but then it really gets cool with highs of only 64 on Thursday, 1 week out from Thanksgiving, which means the holiday shopping season is here, and that means there are people out there looking to rip you off. Alex Hammerstone joins us now, our friend, Director of Advisory Solutions for Trusted Sec. How you doing, Alex?
Not too bad, although your temperatures sound much better than ours. We're supposed to get snow this week in Cleveland.
I'd trade you. I would. I love the cold weather.
Well,
but then again, I say that now, but I probably wouldn't say it in January, would I?
Fair enough, yeah, and February is even worse. So,
and by the way, I'm sorry that the Saints beat the snot out of your Browns, but, you know, it's just business, not personal, right, Alex?
I mean, we don't win a lot of games, so it's a low bar there.
There you go. Well, that's you know, that's the first time I ever had anybody turn it around on me like that. Very well done. Let's talk about things that people need to watch out for. I mentioned here we are almost a week away from Thanksgiving, which means it's the shopping season. I guess it'd be a little bit of a compressed season because Thanksgiving's a little bit later this year. Talk about things that people need to watch out for, Alex.
So keep in mind that it's the holidays for scammers too, right? This is one of their favorite times. And really, throughout the year, the scams oftentimes stay pretty consistent, right? The same types of things. But what the scammers will do is the story that they'll use or the ways that they'll trick you, you know, kind of mold themselves to the holidays. And so around this type of around this time of year, we see a lot more, you know, scams that start with a fake shipping notification, or, you know, that kind of the hot holiday product that everyone's looking for. They'll have fake websites to, you know, get you to try to buy it there, and we'll steal your money and never send you the product, and so on and so forth. So really, it's just an accelerated time for these scammers, you know, and even now, you know, one thing that's really changed too is there's a lot more kind of voice cloning showing up. So where people will be using AI to create voices and really help them scam better, you know, for lack of a better way to describe it.
Tell me about voice cloning for people that, I mean, it would be apparent seemingly from what it is, but for people that don't understand what it would actually sound like or look like in the real world, how they could become a victim of that.
Sure. So it's actually pretty shocking to see, you know, it's we've seen in the movies for years, right? You know, they had CGI and were able to do all these amazing things. You know, I'm sure that, you know, your engineers there, you know, with you know, all their skill and equipment, you know, can do a lot of these things. But what's happened is that a lot of these abilities are now available to everyone, right? So any of us can go online and download one of these programs. And then it just needs, you know, maybe 30 seconds of your voice, you know, saying certain things. Obviously, the more the better, the more it can train on. And then from there, you can just type whatever you want, and the program will say it in your voice. And it makes it really difficult for a lot of people, you know, because you might be getting a call from someone that sounds like a relative or sounds like, you know, someone you know. And you're much more likely to believe a scam if it's coming from someone that you know. It used to be that if you saw a video of something or, you know, heard a recording, you had a lot of assurance that was real. That's really gone out the window these days.
I'm actually, speaking of our engineering staff, Alex, I'm actually fly fishing in Alaska right now. And this is all AI generated that you're hearing. So that goes to show you how up to it our engineers are.
I would believe it, yeah. Believe it or not.
some people. Anyway, let's talk about fake online stores, because I see a story about this. And, you know, at least you used to know when you were walking in, maybe it was a brick and mortar store that you were doing business with the right people. But tell me about a fake online store where it looks like you're doing business with, I don't know if you want to mention a company or not, but come to find out you're not.
Sure. So it's pretty easy to clone websites and kind of take the code and make a website that looks just like a legitimate store. It's even, you know, possible to get yourself listed in search engine rankings. You can buy ads for that store that show up when people search for a certain item, and somebody will visit that site. You know, it looks just like the real site. It'll function just like a real site. You're able to kind of select the products you want, put them in a shopping cart, enter your payment information, and, you know, press, you know, check out. And it'll just never show up. And there's a number of ways that may work. They may just take the money for the product and be finished with it. or they may take the payment information that you share and use that, to drain your bank account or run up your credit card bill. So, making sure that, when we're going out and buying products, we're going with reputable sites and stores. I do always want to be careful, though, because there are smaller retailers, right, who we want to give business to, mm-hmm. and their sites may not look as professional or we may not be familiar with them. But really making sure that you're looking at online ratings, making sure that you're looking at the actual web address of the store that you visit, right? Because we're used to, the name of a store, and the scammers will oftentimes buy a domain name that looks very similar to that same store, and it can be very hard to detect.
So I hate to give a real business name because I don't want to cause trouble for anybody, but let's say LL Lentil, okay? Let's call it that. The store is LL Lentil, and I think I'm doing business with them, and what would I look for in the to determine whether or not it's really them or not?
So you'd want to look at the web address, but the challenge is unless you're familiar with that store, you don't know whether it's, their site is LL Lentil or LL Lentils, or something like that. So, but first off, figure out what the domain should be and then look at it. So what I would do in that case, if I were making a clone site, is I would have LLL Lentil, right? Mm-hmm. Because people may not notice the extra L. So it's things like that, so those indicators. The other thing that's really important is when shopping online, use a credit card or Apple Pay or something like that. You don't ever want to use your debit card, because with a credit card, you have a lot more consumer protections, and generally the charges are reversed pretty quickly in the case of fraud. So one of the best pieces of advice I can give to people is to use a credit card, when shopping online, not a debit card.
What about legitimate stores that somebody texted in that have been hacked, where their sites are hacked? Is that as much a concern, or is it more about a phony site?
So the hacked stores, that's absolutely a concern, but we like to think about what's kind of possible versus what's probable, and it's less likely that you're going to come across a store that's been hacked and the actual legitimate website and all those things have been taken over. It's certainly a possibility, but it's not something that would keep me up at night.
Let's talk about phishing. For somebody else texted in. Matter of fact, let me invite people to text in their questions at 504-260-1870. Alex Hammerstone is the pro's pro when it comes to this. He's the director of advisory solutions for Trusted Sec, and we try to keep you from getting scammed or ripped off online or anything else. And if y'all have any questions, there are no questions that are too rudimentary or dumb, because I've asked them myself because I don't understand half of this. 504-260-1870, the Oakland Art Jeweler Talk and text line, and I'll pass them along to Alex. Somebody texted in and said, y'all talk about fishing. What is fishing? I always talk about salmon fishing, but that's completely different.
I'd love to be salmon fishing right now. But so fishing, spelled with a P-H, so it's a term for really the simplest way to explain it is fake emails, right? So it's somebody sending you an email that purports to be from someone else. It can be, somebody could clone and say it's from you or I, right, and send it to somebody, or they could pretend to be from a company or a bank. And the goal of those phishing attacks is either to get you to, install something, or it'll direct you to a website where it asks you for your username and password, or they're trying to get you to take some kind of action. But phishing is really a spoofed email, right? So it's something that purports to be from someone and it's not really from them. It's impersonation.
Somebody wants to know about how do you make sure that the people that are contacting you are who they say they are, even if you contacted them first, if that makes sense.
So that's a tough one. So oftentimes if you're reaching out to a legitimate party and receive a reply, that's generally going to be them. The best advice I can give to people is, when in doubt, pick up the phone and kind of call. So if you get, an email from a certain organization and you're not sure if it's legitimate, call them. The other thing is, I hate to say use common sense because it feels like you're blaming victims. Because if you're scammed, you are a victim. But oftentimes they're indicators, right? And there's certain things that are just true. You're not going to get emails from certain organizations. The IRS is generally not emailing you. If anybody ever asks you to make a payment for something using gift cards, that's almost always a scam. There's really no time that, for example, you're going to pay a store with gift cards from another store. So there's certain hallmarks that we should be looking out for that are always going to kind of guide you towards making the right decision.
Somebody texted in, apparently in the business, a cohort of yours, you should get Alex to talk about the CIA triad. So you can do that when we come back. Alex, I'm interested to find out what it is myself. Alex Amerson, our guest, Director of Advisory Solutions for TrustedSec. We also want to talk about reviews and how do you know what to believe and what's phony, what's real, what's not. Our guest, 504-260-1870. If you got any questions or comments for him, Tommy Tucker, back in a flash on WWL. It is 9:26. We're talking to our friend Alex Hammerstone, Director of Advisory Solutions for TrustedSec in Cleveland, and we're taking your internet questions, talking about reviews and security as we approach the peak of shopping season, and there are no dumb questions. Alex, the questions are pouring in. The first one, though, is about the CIA triad. I have no idea what that is. Does that have something to do with the CIA as we think about it, the Central Intelligence Agency, or not?
It does not. So okay. It's basically, when we think about information security, we're looking at three things: the confidentiality, integrity, and availability. So confidentiality is pretty straightforward, right? So is information only being accessed by those who are authorized to access it? Integrity is, the integrity of the data. So is the data correct, and has it been modified or changed? I think a lot about the movie Tommy Boy, right? Mm-hmm. A great film, where they change all the order numbers and it causes, havoc and chaos. Mm-hmm. And then availability is really just, can I get to that information or those systems when I need them? So, if you go to log into your computer and it's been ransomware, that computer's unavailable or the systems are unavailable is kind of the simple way to explain it. And those are really kind of the three things that are a huge focus when it comes to securing data.
Somebody texted in about password protection and something with brute force. What is that?
So brute force is really where they're trying a number of, logins against the system. So think about it. If you have a bank account and you're, if I know your username, you can just try systematically really an endless number of, passwords to break into that account. There's a lot of protections against that. A lot of accounts, you'll see it in your own accounts, will lock out after a few attempts. But when you kind of get frustrated by some of these security measures, right, so if you forget your password and enter it incorrectly three or four times and you're locked out and have to wait, it's to prevent things like that. It's to prevent that brute force attack, using brute force against the password.
Talk about social engineering when it comes to trying to develop or find out divine passwords, I guess.
So what's interesting is, when you think about hacking, you'll probably picture somebody in a black hoodie in the basement, writing code and breaking into things. But a lot of, these incidents and events and breaches, the ones that you see in the news, really start with what we call social engineering. And that's just kind of a fancy term for tricking people. And so oftentimes, you can spoof a phone number and you can call somebody, find the number for the IT of their company online, and you can spoof that phone number. And you call them and you say, hey, I'm calling from the IT department. I need your password because we're doing maintenance. And the fact of the matter is a lot of people will tell you their password when asked, if you pretend to be, somebody from a position of authority or so on and so forth. So a lot of times people are just tricked into giving up their passwords rather than, some complicated hack.
I think this is a great text, and I can't say that it wouldn't apply to me. A lot of people throw the word algorithm around and have no idea what it means. Can Alex break that down for us?
Sure, I can do my best. So generally, it's a mathematical equation or formula and kind of series of operations that kind of lead to a result, right? So it's just really a fancy term for some math. It's one of those things that I can try to explain in 10 seconds or I can explain it in an hour, but it's tough to really get anything in between to give a really good explanation there.
So it's a mathematical equation. How do they employ algorithms when it comes to search engines and divining? Is it an algebraic equation based on what it is or trigonometry? I'm about to hurt myself here talking mathematical terms, Alex. Don't let me do that. But basically, it's something that searches the words that you search or something and then combines it with an equation, maybe somewhere in between our definition and the 30 seconds.
Sure. So I'm sure I'll get called out by some sophisticated listeners out there. But generally, it's kind of the settings and configurations and determinations that go into how it's going to determine the result that you're getting. So it's if you think about it, you know, it may, if you search a certain term, you know, part of the standard may be to reject, you know, profanity, or, you know, or downplay certain results from certain places, right? So it's a series of kind of settings and decisions that are going to lead to the desired outcome. And again, that's one of those explanations that I'll probably get called out by people that deal with those things, you know, every day. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of the simplest way I can explain it.
Somebody else wants to know what a firewall is. We had a fire on Bourbon Street in the French Quarter, and I mentioned earlier that we were lucky that it was raining so hard, as compact as everything is there. I know what a traditional firewall is. What is a firewall when it comes to computers?
Sure. So it's something that prevents things you don't want from passing through and allows the things that you want to pass through. You know, they've kind of changed and evolved over the years. But really, if you think about it, you know, you could set your firewall to not allow me to get into your system, from a certain location or something like that, but allow you to get in there, right? So allow the desired access. So it's something that kind of sits between, your resources and the external world, in general, to keep out things you don't want getting in.
Somebody wants to know about how do you begin to trust anybody when it comes to dealing with Bitcoin?
So that's a tough one, only because, you know, Bitcoin tends to be involved in a lot of scams because it's such a portable asset. And it's used for payment and a lot of, nefarious activities. So I think that's one of those things, you know, if you're going to get into the kind of crypto world and start getting into, different cryptocurrencies, is really, find someone that's been doing it for a while that you trust and kind of ask them for advice. There's a lot of unscrupulous characters out there. So just make sure that you're seeking guidance from someone that knows.
Somebody texts it in, and, because we were besieged with choices that we have to make. God knows when you read the end license user agreement, whatever they call it, people, sure, absolutely, whatever. I don't know if anybody's ever read one of those completely and totally, but when it comes to, they say, when they go to a site and it says allow cookies, what does it mean if you allow cookies, if you allow only the basic cookies, or you deny all cookies? What does that mean?
So there are different types of cookies that do different things. But in general, what it is it's a piece of code that sits on your computer, and it kind of keeps track of what you're doing on that website. Some will follow you around and know what you do on other websites as well. But in general, it's when you click on something on a site and then go back to that page, and it's a different color. It's the cookie that's allowing that to happen, right? It's keeping track of what happened, or it's allowing you to keep things in your shopping cart on a website, even though you're visiting different pages. So it's generally a piece of code that's kind of keeping track of what you're doing and following you around. Again, there are ones that, are limited to the site. There are others that are, will kind of follow you further. It's one of the reasons that you may get a certain ad on a website, that you were searching somewhere else or looking at on a different website. But in general, in my view, is cookies are helpful to give you a better, web experience, but they're not perfect, right? There's certain times where you may not want them.
I don't know if I'm reading this right or not, because I don't know what I don't know, but the text is asking about a router offering WPA2 or WPA3 encryption. What does all of that mean?
So what those are is as routers, so you think about your router in your house.
Oh,
so like,
wait,
hang on
a second. Let's go back and talk about a router. What's a router?
Sure. So the router is really the thing that is for the purposes of our conversation and how most people are going to think about it. They're thinking about their wireless router, mm-hmm. right? So it's different than a modem. And so when you think about wireless, we often talk about unsecured wireless or unsafe wireless or wireless that people are able to kind of intercept or see what you're doing. So you want that connection to be encrypted. And more modern routers have more modern encryption standards, right? And the encryption standards have evolved over time. So ensuring that your router is up to date with the latest kind of encryption standards, you're not using a 10-year-old router is essential.
Somebody wants to know about the correlation between search history or the things you search and the pop-up ads you get.
So that's, again, kind of, it's one of those, it depends, right? And so there are a lot of ways that you're kind of tracked online. It's not just cookies. It's also, your device is kind of a fingerprint. So, whether it's the IP or, other pieces of information. And that a lot of things will kind of follow you around the internet, right? And so, if you're searching for something and it's in your search history, you're very likely to get an ad for it, right? That's how things work. Now, it gets a little bit more complicated with different services that you're using, right? So it's Google may keep different information than, Facebook or so on and so forth. But I think in general, what people should know is that your online activity is, it's tracked pretty much all the time. And, we all have, marketers have profiles on all of us about our shopping habits and what we're interested in and so forth. And I think it would really curl people's hair if they, knew how much data marketers have about us.
Well, it wouldn't curl mine because mine left me a long time ago. Let's talk about search results and paid advertisements and reliability of reviews and what's real and what's paid and what's sponsored, et cetera. Alex, how do you even go about determining that? If I'm looking for, say, blue jeans and I search blue jeans, the results I'm going to get are prompted by what?
So it's complex and it's ever evolving. And, there's a lot of people kind of online talking about how search has become a lot less useful, right? So in the old days, you might search something and, the top three or four results would be what you were looking for. But now there's a whole industry of trying to guess, what will propel you up in the search rankings. There's kind of a joke that, one of the safest places to hide is the second page of the search results, right? Because people generally don't even look there. So there's a huge
competition. Wait, say that again? Say that part again?
So the joke is kind of the safest place to hide is the second page of the search results, right? Because people generally just look at the first page. Mm-hmm. They look at the top 10 or top 20 search results. And so from a marketing perspective or a business perspective, it's hugely important for companies to be high up in those search rankings.
But wait, and is so it then, let me interrupt for 1 second. Is it then as a consumer, do you get a more objective view by skipping the first page and going to the second page or not?
Sometimes you do. Sometimes you find a lot of other things. You might find, companies that aren't as good at the search engine game. They might be very legitimate results or research results. And so it's just over the years, there's just been a lot of, looking into and speculating about how you get higher in the search rankings and then designing sites to show up specifically in the search rankings. Some unscrupulous parties take advantage of that, right? So they'll try to get sites that are irrelevant in there. But also, for a lot of us, the first few results you'll see on the page are paid advertising. So you might be searching for, pizza company A, and, pizza company B will buy ads to show up when you search that. So you may, when you see those ads at the top, may not be what you're looking for.
Let me get to this real quick, and we could have you on for 8 days a week talking about this because the questions never end because I don't know that anybody fully understands all of this, but this is a pretty basic one. Somebody wants to know about stopping and unsubscribing to emails because you think you unsubscribe, but you really don't, and if you don't read carefully, you might be signing up for even more. Talk about that if you would. Alex, please.
So here's the thing. So legitimate companies, if you ask to stop receiving email and unsubscribe, then they will take you off their list. But not every company is legitimate, right? So you might be on a list that you're not going to be removed from. The bigger companies, the companies that, are kind of household names and are operating within kind of the rules will remove you when you unsubscribe. Unfortunately, as we talk about pretty often, a lot of, people that are on the internet and organizations that are on the internet are not as scrupulous. So even if you request to be taken off the email list, you may not be. The other, kind of smaller piece is, I run into this all the time, where I'll unsubscribe from an email list, not realizing that I'm signed up for 10 different emails, from that company, and you have to go and remove yourself from all 10 email lists.
Thank you, Alex. Appreciate your time and the information. As always, Alex Hammerstone, Director of Advisory Solutions for TrustedSec. When we come back, we're going to talk about tariffs and what President-elect Trump's planning to do. 940, 20 till 10, traffic now, WWL. 9:46, 14 till 10, Tommy Tucker, WWL. I'm not going to play it again. I'm not going to waste the time. But the infamous Ferris Bueller quote, who knows anything about tariffs? Bueller? Anyone? Bueller? That's Ben Stein from the movie Ferris Bueller talking about Smoot-Hawley and tariffs, and we thought we'd talk about tariffs with Alex Durante, economist at the Tax Foundation. Good morning, Alex. How are you?
Hi, doing well. Thanks for having me on.
You know, we got a special session going on in Louisiana now, trying to redo the state's tax code. Very complicated stuff, not necessarily as directly cause and effect related as you would think in some cases, but when it, as it relates to tariffs, is it that complicated or not?
I don't really think it's that complicated at all, to be honest. I mean, if you look at the, you know, we have a lot of academic literature on this, a lot of evidence, you know, going back several decades now, and I think the evidence you know, shows pretty conclusively that tariffs hurt the economy and fall disproportionately on consumers and businesses in America, and that's who's going to be bearing the cost of the tariffs.
And again, maybe we should start with a basic definition. We presume people know, but they don't. What is a tariff by definition?
Yes. So tariff is simply a tax on imports. So it's a tax that is largely you know, passed on to consumers and businesses at the point of sale.
I want to bring the audience in, by the way, on this, our Oakenard Jeweler Talking text line at 504-260-1087, if y'all have any questions about President Trump's plans here on tariffs. What is it that President Trump has proposed to do?
Right, so President Trump has proposed two things. So under his first administration, he enacted tariffs on a variety of Chinese goods. He is proposing to raise those tariffs to between 60% and 100%. I believe the highest of those right now in some tranches of goods are about 25%. And then in addition to that, he's also proposed universal tariff between 10 and 20% on all U.S. imports. And, you know, we have plenty of evidence from just, you know, the China tariffs that those hurt the economy and that consumers were forced to pay higher prices because of them. And I think there's no reason to think that, you know, that we would see a different result, you know, if we were to go further in this direction and increase tariffs and introduce new ones even more broadly.
So what is his end goal here, and where does the train run off the tracks?
Yeah, so I think Trump is coming at this from really two angles. So one is that he wants to offer protection, you know, to certain domestic U.S. industries. And I think what we've seen, you know, from recent experience is that while tariffs might help, you know, certain industries in the U.S., you know, they disproportionately impact the economy in the aggregate. And the reason for this is that a lot of the China tariffs that were implemented under his administration targeted what's called these intermediate goods. Mm-hmm. So these are goods that are used as inputs in a different production. So, you know, as one example, I mean, Trump imposed tariffs on steel and aluminum. You know, that might have been good for the steel and aluminum producers, but, you know, for businesses that use steel and aluminum in their production process, let's say like the automobile industry, for instance, you know, now, you know, their input costs rise, so it's now more expensive, you know, to produce cars, and then those costs ultimately get passed on to consumers who now have to pay, you know, higher prices for their automobiles. And so that's kind of the first angle. And then the second angle is that Trump is very concerned about this thing called the trade deficit. So to put it simply for your listeners, the U.S. imports a lot more than we export. And, you know, some people think that's a bad thing, but it really isn't, because, you know, you think about China in this case. You know, China saves a lot more than the U.S. because, you know, they export more to us. They don't have a very large consumer market there. And what does that mean for us? Well, because they save a lot more, you know, they're willing to invest their dollars in the U.S. You know, the U.S. is the global reserve currency. A lot of countries, you know, they really want to hold the U.S. dollar, and what that means is that we get more investment from abroad, and they're also just willing to lend more money to us, which means that, you know, we can borrow more cheaply, you know, than we would be able to otherwise, and that allows us, you know, to consume more, you know, than we would under an alternative scenario, you know, where, you know, we weren't the global reserve currency. So I think Trump is just fundamentally, misinformed, you know, across these two dimensions here.
So what would it look like if the president gets his way and he institutes the tariff, in your opinion, the tax foundation's opinion, if these tariffs go through? What would it look like to the consumer?
Well, tariffs, to put it very simply, they make the U.S., poorer. Your dollar doesn't go as far along as it would in the absence of the tariff. So I'll give you a very, quick, simple example here. Let's say that I purchase, a laptop from, Japan for $1,000. And let's say Trump imposes, his 20% universal tariff. So now I'm going to be paying an extra $200, so $1,200 at the point of sale for this laptop. That is $200 I have less to spend elsewhere in the economy. So what that means is that the economy has to shrink overall because I'm spending less money in other sectors. So while maybe domestic, say, laptop production sector, might benefit, but it comes at a great cost in the aggregate. And as I was saying, I think the one thing that we learned from this recent election is that consumers really hate higher prices. They really they punished, I think, the current administration for the recent wave of inflation that we had. And, I think given that the voters sent a very clear signal, it's very, unclear to me why we would want to move in a direction, that could lead to a higher prices for voters.
So what does this mean with other countries? Because tariffs work both ways, right?
No, that's exactly right. So one of the things we did see from Trump's first term is that when the tariffs were imposed on China, and when we enacted tariffs on steel and aluminum, other countries did retaliate with their own tariffs, and that actually hurt our export markets, especially in the Great Plains states, like Iowa, because one of our key exports, to a lot of these countries, was food and other agricultural products. So really, we were hurt on both ends. I mean, consumers and businesses were hurt from the initial round of tariffs, and then the retaliatory tariffs, hurt U.S. markets even further.
So the tariffs are going to raise prices, but then the consumer has a choice, pay it or not, right? Or not?
Well, you think about it this way, the whole idea behind tariffs is to make the domestic goods relatively cheaper. But when I say relatively, that means the domestic goods,
not net cheaper, but in comparison.
Exactly, in comparison. But what that means is that overall, I mean, the domestic good and import good are both more expensive, right, relatively speaking. So at the end of the day, even if the consumer chooses to purchase the relatively cheaper domestic product, they're still paying more than they would have in the absence of the tariffs, because if the tariffs didn't exist, they would have purchased the import good. That would have been cheaper, and they would have been paying less money, as a result.
I only got 10 seconds here, but is it, Alex, as simple as if you say you can't tax a business, basically a tariff, because it gets passed on to the consumers? If you put a tariff, then what you're doing is basically taxing the business, which is going to then get passed along to the consumer. Same argument?
Yep, that's exactly right. And I think the economic evidence speaks to that. They found almost complete pass through of the tariffs. So what that means is that, contrary to what Trump said, the tariffs were not being borne by Chinese companies. They're being borne by American businesses and consumers.
All right, thank you, Alex. Appreciate your time. Alex Durante, economist at the Tax Foundation. Those in favor of tariffs, there you go. You'll get your way. If you don't like them, then you won't get your way. We'll be back, WWL.